Thank you for tuning in to Lighten Up with Jen and Sherry. This show is an invitation to let go of what's holding you down, laugh more, and love like crazy. If you've tuned in live to this episode, please call in now and be a part of the show. Our number is area code 646-200-0825. And now, flying solo for today is our hostess, Jen.
Hello and welcome to Lighten Up with Jen and Sherry. I am Jen, I'm flying solo, Jen Halterman here, and I welcome you so much on this. It is a holiday, the day that this show is being recorded, so if you're able to join in live, I welcome you, and if you are listening to an archive, I hope you're having a great day, whatever that looks like. Our phone lines are open, and last Friday we opened up the topic of with a show. It is show number 64, and it's what to do if jealousy is killing your relationship. And unbeknownst to me, when I started the show, we were going to open up a topic that would dive into our childhood, our programming, and we really got into the exploration of jealousy. And so because of you, because of the listeners, the callers, their bravery, the chat room, the letters I've gotten since then, I have decided to continue the topic into this week. I don't know how long it'll go. Quite honestly, I'm not concerned about that. We will go until we're done talking about the topic because so many of us became aware, and I'm included, so many of us became aware that during our earliest years as infants, children, our only thought was, how do I survive? How do I get my needs met? We were nonverbal. You know, what did we do? We cried. You know, whatever it was. So we started learning. We started taking on patterns. We started seeing how this existence was going to work so that we could get our needs met. And what are our needs? You know, and the very basic, we need some food. We need shelter. We need some affection, human touch. And so those are the things that comfort us and helped us and nurtured us in those very early years. And so, holy cow, did we look at this dynamic of our relationship with our parents, our relationship with our siblings, competing for food, competing for affection, for time, attention, seeking that appraisal of parents, and oh my gosh, that came wide open. And I've got to tell you, there's a few times with the show I was on previously, my other show, Everyday Joy, and then with Lighten Up, there are a few topics that when they open up, they are such an invitation. There's a deep invitation for inner exploration. And when that happens, part of my commitment to show up and provide as much support as I can on this particular front, my commitment is to stay with it until the energy lightens, until it lifts. And this has got some energy to it. So I did get an update from Blog Talk Radio that they had done some fixes and some things. So guess what? I got into the chat room right away today. If you want to join me there, you can. If you are listening live, the chat room can be found on the show page. You scroll down to the bottom of the page, and you can just watch there. Unless you have an account with Blog Talk Radio as a listener, and then you just sign in, and that's when you can actually contribute to and send messages in the chat room. And for some listeners, that is how they choose to communicate with me. Also, I do have Facebook open, so if you want to try that way to communicate with me, I am able to receive messages there as well. Oh, so, jealousy, comparing and competing. What came up for you? What came up for me? It started out as relationships, but then it really was a look at how it's killing our aliveness, which is our expression of our everything that we be on a spiritual, physical, emotional, mental, you know, every level expressing fully is what I consider aliveness. And jealousy played such a huge part in minimizing that aliveness, dimming it down. And some of the key components that came up consistently through the conversations I had, through the callers, through the chat room dynamic was comparing and competing. That seemed to be the benchmark that we learned very young to start comparing and competing. So we would compare what we were getting or somebody else was getting, and then we would start competing with that person or that whatever to get whatever they were getting, which sets up this brilliant, brilliant mindset of scarcity, because there's never enough. Because if they're getting what I need, if they're getting the food, if they're getting mom's attention, if they're getting dad's lap time, if they're getting whatever it is, then I'm not getting it. So guess what? That tells us, that programmed our brains, that there's a limited amount, and if you don't get it, somebody else does. Holy crap. What a can of worms. So scarcity being a huge, huge program, which is jealousy. And as long as jealousy is present, we cannot fully dive in to the intimacy that's truly available to us. And intimacy is, it contributes to our aliveness. So as I really open up the phone lines, invite you to call in. The number is 646-200-0825. I welcome your comments and conversations today. I'm really self-conscious. I'm self-aware of where honor plays in this, trust plays in this, allowance, vulnerability, appreciation, expression, communication, all of it, compassion, empathy. I am really aware of how all of that plays into this. And so I actually had done something I haven't done in a while, which is pretty fun. I made a contact with somebody who I love and adore that I have, that just this morning, there was no warning on this one. It was one of those nudges that came with a thunk to the back of the head. And I said, hey, guess what? Guess what the topic of the show is today? Because this particular person is one of my very best friends on the planet, and she and I have rumbled through jealousy. We have rumbled through comparing and competing. We have rumbled through choosing our aliveness. And so it is with a huge, huge amount of love and appreciation for her willingness to join me on the show. I welcome Angie Milgate to the show today. As she probably yawns and, you know, wipes the sleep out of her eye because no warning. Angie, thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. Thank you for waking me up. I was dreaming about war, so I feel much happier being here talking about what the hell, comparison and competition, really.
I know. And what I would like to say is one of the reasons that that Angie, I believe, because, you know, it wasn't me. It was spirit, angels, guides, whatever it was that thumped me on the back of my head. But the reason that I think that they came through and said, you and Angie need to have this conversation, is because, quite frankly, we have been on the really petty, shitty, immature side of this. In our friendship, in our dynamic, in how we saw the world, we have done this really, really well. And we have also kept a relationship intact while we cleaned it up. Now, we've had some timeouts, but overall, we've kept it intact. And I think that's what Spirit was saying, like, hey, this is a big thing, and people think this is going to, you know, kill it all the way. You two talk about this. So at least that's my take on it. It's like, okay, so here's the dirty laundry, and this is how we cleaned it up.
Well, what's hilarious for me is that even sitting here listening to you, the old comparison monsters jumping up and saying, hey, I don't remember you ever being jealous. I always thought it was me that was jealous and me that was causing the problem. So even in that comparison and jealousy monster, it's trying to sneak its way in there.
That's so good, isn't it? Like, oh, wait, if we're talking about this topic, I think I'm the one who did this worse. Oh, how awesome is that? Well, I don't even know if you heard Friday's show, if you listened to it or not, but what ended up, my take on what ended up happening was I got vulnerable. I shared what it was like for me to be in a space where somebody else was competing always. There was always jealousy. There was like this, no matter what I did, somebody was setting out to derail me because I was the one they were jealous of. Now, that's ironic based on what you just said. So, funny. And then, but then what unfolded, Angie, is this delicious conversation. We had a caller call in, Mr. Tyler called in, and he was vulnerable and shared. And then Sherry went into a huge awareness for herself. She was very vulnerable and went in. And then we had Charlene in the chat room. It just everything was going on all at once. But there were a couple things that were very common, and I'm wondering if you and I are going to be able to pull that thread a little bit, is that perfect, perform, and please, that programming of perfectionists came from this programming of comparing, competing, and how to get attention was to be perfect at it. But then what happened is I also became aware of myself and others that when they got too much attention then, so when they did the performing, they did the perfecting, they did the what, they got too much, then they actually became so uncomfortable because, oh no, don't give me all the attention. You need to share it with some of those other people that are so jealous of me. So they would actually shut down themselves from receiving. Because if they couldn't, so it was almost like this weird dynamic of if I couldn't achieve greatness, then I'm going to sit back here and suck.
I'm going to be the greatest sucker.
Yeah, exactly. I am going to be the best at being the loser. Like, what? And then, you know, and then there's the other side of it of, oh my gosh, I am so amazing. I can see the jealousy all around me. Oh, no, 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 no. Let's dim the lights a little bit because the tall poppy's about to get their head chopped off. Okay? Okay, Angie. So you have a different take on it. Can you just talk to me? What was your programming? What did you start believing at a young age? Like, how did this start for you?
Ooh, that's interesting. Damn it, Jen.
Oh, you know, you're welcome. And I don't even know what the hell I did yet.
So I went inside and checked in on that. Where did my programming for comparison and competition begin? And I was an only child for 5 years. My mother had a miscarriage when I was 2, and my younger sister didn't come into the world until I was 5, and then my younger brother when I was 7. So for 5 years, I was an only child. However, I was the only child of a mother who was born into this world as a mistake. She was conceived out of wedlock, and in the 1940s, that was, you know, really, really horrible. Not only was she conceived out of wedlock, but she was conceived out of wedlock to a Roman Catholic young man and a Mormon young woman. So it was like taboo all the way through. And for all of her life, even now, when both of her parents are dead, she still doesn't know who her biological father is, because her biological father always said, you're not my child. She must have had sex with the mailman. And there is some historical evidence in my grandfather's military journals, because he was actually in the military at the time, and he was away in Texas on a base at the time that my mom would have been conceived, that it's possible that he's not telling a lie. That, and in the last few years of my grandma's life, we were at a family party and we were all sitting, all the women were sitting around chatting, and all the men and the young kids were playing basketball. And I said to my grandma, "Grandma, were you a virgin when you married Grandpa? I mean, I just, when you met Grandpa." Because everybody by now knows that they were pregnant when they got married. And she goes, "Well, heavens no, sweetie. I was a trollop. I have had sex with 5 men before Victor came into my life." And I, and my mom and her sister, their jaws just dropped. Nobody had ever asked her that direct of a question before. So when I was born into the world, my father was also in military, and which really strikes me as funny now, knowing who he is. But he was gone a lot because he was in the guard. So during the summer, he was gone a lot. And there's a picture in my baby album of me at like 6 months, maybe a year old, crying the most heartbroken cry. And that was what the picture popped in my head when you asked, when did my pattern start? And it was in that moment. And the caption in my baby album is, "Angie really misses her daddy when he's gone to summer camp." So I would have been about a year old. And there are two incidences from a year or younger where I remember actually that my mom got really sick, like deathly ill when I was 6 months old, and she couldn't care for me, and my dad wasn't home, and so she laid me on a blanket beside the bed on the floor, and I just completely entertained myself all day long and took care of myself. And this needing to take care of myself, needing to survive, needing to be good so I could survive is a generational pattern that runs through my mother's side of the family. And so for me, I had no idea that my need to watch outside of myself to see what was happening so that I could judge what I needed to be or do to be called good so that I could go on living started then.
Oh my gosh! So if you're good, you can go on living, but if not, you could actually die. Like that is a huge program to take on as a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that gives me chills.
You're bringing so much into clarity about my entire experience between the years 2006 and 2010.
Yeah, those are some good years.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay, so I know, I mean, your siblings are alive and they are able to listen to the show and all this stuff if they wanted to and da-da-da-da-da. But what are you willing to share as to how that played out? Like, honestly, accountable, what did that teach you as the oldest child? How did that play out? Just briefly, and because I know it was kind of a mess.
Well, and
we'll talk about you cleaning it up, because I think there's a gift there.
The way it showed up, first of all, the other energy that runs through my mother's line is it's you and me against the world, kid. And that has perpetuated through, it shows up in our baby years, in our younger years, in our bonding years, in the core development years before the age of 6. The mother and the child are isolated together, and they form this bond against
a
the world.
Contract.
Survived. Yes, a contract.
Yeah.
And it has played out for, it played out in my relationship with my daughter, it played out in my relationship with my mom, it played out with her and her mom and her mother and her grandmother. So it's gone back that far. I imagine it's deeper than that. But so when my sister came into the world, I hated her because she usurped my position in the world. She, and I was still in my core formative years, And this new baby showed up who took all of my mother's and time. And when my father was there, he, of course, was absorbed with her. And I still have a judgment that Chris, my sister, is his favorite child. So how it showed up for me in my relationship with my sister is she was the one that took away my safety. As a child, my sister was painfully shy. Like, she was so shy, she would not lift her chin and look at the world. She was terrified of men with beards, and it was the 70s, so most men had beards. So she wouldn't look at them in the face. And she was just really shy and inward. Well, now she's like this national celebrity and filmmaker and award-winning photographer and journalist. And I have absolutely no bitterness.
That was nice. I have no bitterness about this award-winning sister I have.
And she and I actually sat down in January and had a conversation about it while she was in town about how insignificant I have felt in comparison to my little sister. Now, my little brother, he was born when I was 7. And my sister and I joke that Mike is the second Jesus Christ, that he was conceived through Immaculate Conception, that he can do no wrong, that he's like this perfected being on earth. You know, of course, he rolls his eyes. But when he came into the world, of course, my sister hated the baby. And my sister and him were only 20 months apart. So for her, it was another baby came in, but she's the baby of the family. For me, I was like, yeah, there's another baby. And then it became this, I'm the older sister. I don't belong with them. They're best friends. I have no one. And, oh, shit. That's when the triangle relationship dynamic fear I have, that and some of the coaching from my mom. But that's when it began, because it was always 2 against 1. And I was always left out. So that's how the jealousy in comparison showed up.
Okay, so for those who are listening, Angie just perfectly laid out how our little young brains, our very young brains, interpret situations and take on patterns of behavior and go into that habit. Like, well, if I don't know how you're doing, I don't know how I'm doing. Why? Because we're competing for the same amount of love. We're competing for the same amount of affection or attention or whatever. Dad only has so much time available. I better get time. Oh, no, Chris took more time again. Oh, no, you know, brother is, you know, favorite with mom or whatever. And they can't do any wrong. So now I'm out. That is, and to me, okay, to believe you are separate from is a program of the ego. It's one of the things I want you to believe, is you are separate from everything, everyone, separate from God, separate. You are separate from. Shame wants you to believe you are separate from, you're not getting it because you're broken, wrong, and bad. And when these things come in, I mean, good gosh, look at that dynamic, right? And we don't know that there's another option. We don't know. What we do is we create, you know, patterns of behavior, habits, perspectives of the world that further that in our life, which means that we call in proof of its truth. So the triangle thing. Okay, there's three of us. We're going to compete. You know, how perfect is that? There's just, you can't have cohesiveness in a triangle. Except for you actually can. You just didn't learn you could from the very beginning. So you didn't have any basis that triangles were safe. So triangles were the enemy, you know? And based on that dynamic with your mother of, oh, you too, this little cocoon, it's you and me against the world kid, you know, one-on-ones were safe. So therefore, that's a setup for jealousy, especially if you get in a friendship with somebody who is a community builder and a big connector. You know, if you get in any kind of dynamic that. And I would say that I filled that role really well for you.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah. Yeah, because we did. We, early on in our friendship, and even, you know, just the other day you said, oh, funny, I just blew up another belief I had, another lie that I had, because that's how we talk to each other. But it still shows up in a very sneaky way of, okay, what am I doing? What game am I playing here? What's happening? Mm-hmm. Oh, I had a story. You wouldn't need me for this. Oh, look at me, counting myself out again.
Yeah.
So, Angie, if somebody's listening, if somebody is listening and saying, I have these programs from my childhood, what the hell do I do? What would you tell them, dear? Because you fought a lot of options for a long time. What did they need to know? Like, what's the starting point for them?
One of the things, I want to back up for just a second, because something you said in that sparked an awareness. I heard you say in a family with two siblings that could do no wrong, and what struck me was I wanted to reiterate that my very first awareness of where this competition and comparison started for me was as an infant, when I realized I had to be good to survive. Enter my two siblings who can do no wrong. How will I ever survive? If my brother and sister don't do anything wrong, how can I ever be good enough to survive?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So,
I'm just trying to actually let that land. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So it's the deep one.
I know.
So you asked me some of the ways. Okay, repeat the question because I got really like woozy and dizzy and spinny on that awareness.
Yeah, I think that awareness, it deserves a little bit more respect and conversation. It doesn't matter to where we were going to go. We're here now. and the reason I say that is they can do no wrong. Therefore, they are always right. So if they can do no wrong, I must be right. I must compete with being right because otherwise, I'm out. I'm wrong. And out means I die. And, you know, I was thinking about that with the share that Tyler did the other day when he was saying how he had such a hard time being seen as the one who could do no wrong. And so in his response, he stepped off the pedestal. He got out of the spotlight. He sabotaged. He did not, he didn't continue his athletic pursuits. He literally ducked out of the light. And I think about both sides of that. That right there, the trying to measure up with the one who could do no wrong, and then being the one who could do no wrong, so therefore I'm going to have to, I don't want all this attention because I could see the pain around me and da-da-da. So that right there is the complete illustration why comparing and competing kills our aliveness. Every one of us. It does not matter if you're the one on the pedestal or the one trying to shimmy up it. It does not matter. It kills our aliveness because it has us adjusting our expression of our authentic essence and soul into the world according to the perception of somebody else. And if we are adjusting it according to the perception of somebody else, it is dimming it. It's shutting it down. It's creating a lack of trust. We are not honoring it. That is why I use the very strong word of killing it. It's killing our aliveness. This is so toxic, and so prevalent. We accidentally drop this programming in our families, in our schools, in our culture, at work, in friendships. We accidentally do it because, you know, nobody's willing to ask that tough question. We got to talk about this, otherwise it keeps going. And so I'm so appreciating that you called in, that we're talking about this, because I think this is, it's a shame program. And I think that it kills our aliveness. It's worth having words wrapped around it. It's worth bringing it to the light and choking it off, man, because it doesn't serve. It is killing our aliveness.
Well, and the interesting thing is I just followed the energy of this programming back through the ages, and it felt kind of like that movie Lucy. If any of you have seen the movie Lucy, it is quite a remarkable movie. But it felt like that scene where she traveled backwards through time. And what I'm seeing is this root, the core nugget root of this program is primal. It's in our DNA programming, primal, because in the beginning of mankind, in the beginning of humanity, we had to compete to survive. If the strong, can't think of the scientist who coined the phrase survival of the fittest, but literally to stay alive, you had to be the strongest, you had to be the fastest, you had to be on your game, and you have to be faster than the wild animals that you were living amongst as well. So it's a very primal, archaic program that no longer serves us.
Right. It really doesn't serve us, because what we're doing is, when we are in our aliveness, which is just the most vibrant state of being, it is a state of being. It is a state of doing from our state of being. It is about having everything that supports that aliveness in flow and ease, all while we experience humanity. It's not a guarantee or anything, but aliveness is such a state of allowance. And if we are blocking it because we, you know, our primal instincts have kicked in, and instead of, you know, the last banana that's going to get us through the day because it's the only food that's available that we're competing for, now we're competing for nothingness. We're competing for likes on Facebook. We're competing for, you know, a paying client. And sometimes that is triggering survival. We're competing for notoriety, you know, for acknowledgement and awards, and we're competing for time and attention from somebody, that kind of thing. And it is, I'm trying to think, you know, it triggers our survival brain, but is it really, I mean, will we survive? No, our ego may die off if we don't feed it, you know, but will we keep surviving if we don't get acknowledged in this world? Or is it like when we were a child and, you know, we require affection? That's a really interesting thing for my little brain to go off and wonder, because I know people who can go to the mountains and stay. But I know people who can go to the mountains and stay because they're in complete connection with their soul. But I also know people who go to the mountains and stay because they're hiding because connection is too painful for them. Or they're hiding because they don't want to have to be authentic. Or they're hiding because they're scared or whatever. And so I think every individual has their own interpretation of aliveness and how that expresses.
Right.
So even as you're listening to what we're talking about, you know, because we're talking about a number of different things, this comparing and competing, notice if you start comparing and competing with what we're saying. Notice if you're looking for what's right or wrong. Notice if you go into judgment, and judgment is, are you resisting and reacting to it or aligning and agreeing with it? or are you just able to witness through this radio show? Are you just being given permission to witness our perspective?
Mm-hmm.
Notice what comes up for you. Because being witness is to see and know by personal experience. You're having a personal experience of Angie and I at this moment. That's who you're listening to, sharing our perspective. But if you go into judgment, you've already created some separation. This is just like, you know, orgasm for my brain. Like, oh, look at this. Do you see how we trick ourselves? Because our aliveness doesn't require this. My aliveness does not care what the number on the scale says compared to, you know, the person next to me on the bus. My aliveness doesn't have anything to do with that. None. And yet the compare and compete, the body image, the, you know, the status in industry shaming and all that stuff just derails us.
Well, I'm having this moment. Aliveness and survival, people have tried to make those words synonymous, meaning the same thing. And the truth is, survival and aliveness are two different experiences of existence. Survival is a very ego-driven base of living, whereas aliveness is very divine. It's essence-based. It's being connected with yourself, being connected with the source of your life, of your creation. And when, as Jen has mentioned, when you're comparing and competing innately contain the disconnect portion of life, because you have to be separate from, different from, excluded from whoever you are comparing with and competing against. You cannot be one and compare and compete. You can't.
Nope. No, which is why jealousy and friendship will screw it up.
Absolutely.
Screw it up in relationships. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh. Okay. Okay, so let's talk about this. Uh-oh, what are you giggling about? Do you feel it coming?
the jealousy in friendships is what I'm giggling about.
Yeah.
I can laugh now.
I'm so glad you can, because this is, well, and I think this is really good for people listening, because so many people go to shame with jealousy, or they go to blame. Mm-hmm. So shame and blame, shame is I'm wrong, I'm broken. Blame is it's your fault that I'm having a miserable experience. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is in jealousy situations, somebody's triggered and they experience jealousy, friends or intimate relationship, doesn't matter. Okay. So somebody has experienced a jealousy come up in them. They think it's about the person that is threatening what they perceive as their dynamic with a person. Okay, this is the example we're using. So in friendship, your best friend, you see somebody getting their time, attention, whatever, you start getting jealous. Your partner, your loved one, you know, you start seeing somebody flirting with them or whatever, giving them attention, getting attention from them, whatever, jealousy comes up, okay? Now, notice, if you have jealousy come up and you judge it, you've already separated yourself from that relationship. It's not the other person coming into your awareness that separates the relationship. Your jealousy is the dividing factor. That's a tough one to realize, Angie. How can somebody who's in it possibly hear this message, because you and I went the rounds on this of not seeing it. So how do we see it now?
uh, Am I going to go here? Hold on. Oh, somebody out there is really struggling. They're like, no!
I know.
No! I want to be right!
That's
no!
A sound bite! I know, and that's why I think it's important to talk about is, yeah.
So, I'm going to say it. These two stances, comparing and competing, are built on the foundation of victim. You have to be a victim to be in comparing and competing. And it starts out in, oh, God, I suck. But it can switch over into the villain, I'm better than you. So, but it starts in victimhood, because if you didn't give a crap about what everybody else was doing and you were living your life and you were being fully alive, it wouldn't matter what your best friend was doing or who your best friend was best friends with, because you would be doing your own life. But and I'm going to speak from my experience, as I was listening to Jen talking about how comparison can shred a relationship. And she was speaking specifically about friendships, but this is across the board. It's intimate relationships, it's family relationships, it's business relationships as well as friendships. Any relationship, jealousy will shred it. It will shred it. And as I was listening, I got thinking about all of the people whom I have been in love with or who I am family members with, close, intimate family, nucleus family, best friends. My other person in that relationship has been a celebrity of sorts. So for one who comes from the program of I must be good to survive, to attract celebrity energy to pair up with, it puts me right up against the edge of, can I ever be good enough to survive in this relationship? And how it has played out with, I don't know if y'all have ever met Jen Halterman, but she is the Jen Halterman. And the way it has played out in my relationship with her is I got smaller and smaller and smaller. There were a couple of times that I tried to villainize the situation and get bigger and bigger. And the bigger I got, the bigger Jen got in the energy of the relationship until we exploded and went apart. So for me to be successful, quote-unquote successful in this relationship with Jen, I had to keep minimizing myself and getting smaller and smaller and smaller, which was a perfect, I'm going to tell on you, Jen, which is a perfect pairing for Miss Jen, whose program was, I can't be too big or I won't survive.
Yep. Perfect.
It literally looked like me sobbing at her kitchen table for hours on end as she was trying to get me to see the patterns I was running. And the more she tried to help me, the smaller and the more victimized I got until we were both in the worst aspects of ourselves.
Yeah.
Painful.
Yeah.
Painful.
That was it. Very, very freaking painful, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's so interesting because, well, one of the things I want to say before you go on is one of the pieces that was so big was at first, so when you would be like, everybody likes you, you're the new popular kid, bah, 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 bah.
Yeah.
I would try to minimize myself, and then I'd be like, yeah, I'm not going to shrink down for you, so you just stay you, and I'll just be me, and then you would start to, like, just pummel yourself with shame,
mm-hmm.
and I would end up, like, shrinking down because the truth is I was trying to save your ass. And so I would go smaller in a sneaky mm-hmm. way. So at first it was like, no, I'm not going to go smaller. You know,
right.
I don't have to go smaller for us to be friends. We can both be friends and both of us can be awesome. And then, you know, another change of the role playing and I would be smaller and smaller, like, come on, Angie, come on, Angie. And then it was like, rah, forget it. And there I am, great big, and, you know, we're both in hell and our shadows mm-hmm. are having fun and our egos are going out to drink together. And it was a great time.
It was lovely.
Well, so how did we get out of it?
The interesting thing is, when we would get in that situation, I was experiencing it as being utterly pathetic. I felt utterly pathetic in that dynamic. I was the pathetic victim, which in my work and in my studies, the pathetic victim is the victimized victim of victimhood. I mean, it's like, how much shit can you pile on you to prove that you stink enough? And that's how I
feel.
Well,
it's actually perfecting fucking.
Yes, that's exactly.
If I can't win, I'm going to lose the best.
Yes. And I would love, I'm going to ask you this because I'm going to share my perspective. And I would love for you, Jen, to share your perspective. So maybe our people that are listening can understand. So for me, I was pathetic. I was the victimized victim of victimhood, feeling pathetic and experiencing Jen as a gigantic villain. I never experienced her as a hero, even when she was trying to save me. She was my villain that was kicking the shit out of me.
Of course.
How
are
you experiencing it?
I would say that dynamic played out with, it was like I had a shield up for all of your pathetic shit flinging of, and it came in different ways. So it was either, oh yeah, you're just perfect, which was a big trigger for me and you knew it really well. You're just perfect, you know, I can never measure up to you. But then on the flip side, when that wasn't working, then it would be like, yeah, you're not perfect. I know your dark side. So on one hand, I had a shield up against that. So I was like, oh, my gosh, fling all you want. No, I'm not going to do it. And then from my perspective, it wasn't about villain or hero or even victim. It was about... do not topple. That to me, which is probably where you got the villain from. Do mm-hmm. not topple. Because if I crumbled, I knew that you would not feel better. Somehow in it, I knew you would not feel better. And so there was no point in crumbling. There was no point in toppling. But there was a steadfastness within me of, I will stand here. I will hold the light. You don't ever, ever, ever have to find it. You don't have to follow it. But I will not turn out my light because I know better than to think you're going to feel better if I do. And that is where it can look very stoic and cold because I'm not playing into the, you know, the game. But where it's not a hero move like I'm reaching out to you, it's a hero move of, yep, I'm just going to keep dangling this carrot over here and what you do with it's up to you, but I'm still dangling the carrot hoping you'll follow it. That's the hero. I hope you will get yourself out of the depression. I hope you'll get yourself out of the muck. I hope you'll get yourself out of the feeling victimized by others. I hope you'll speak up for yourself. Like all that was still going inside of me. And that hoping was actually kind of like an internal pleading of my heart that you would save my best friend from the spiral I was witnessing.
Oh, y'all, you just heard why I love this woman so much. She is not a normal human being. I'm so grateful that you shared that, because I am so grateful for this friendship, for this relationship with Jen, because of her strength, which I used to experience as a weapon against me. However, because she was able to hold that strength, I was able to become, I was able to break through that shell of victimhood and step into the light that is my own. Yes, she held the light
right.
so that I could remember I had it in me. I had to reclaim it. My experience in the work that I do, my experience is most human beings are not that gracious, Jen. They really aren't. And you just got to witness how amazing she is. And the work that she does comes from this place of being able to hold the light and being able to stand strong and not shake. But I'll tell you what, she's human. Too. She
yeah.
does break.
Yeah.
She does have feelings. She does hurt. She does cry. And I've been with her when her strength has peeled back and allowed that humanness to rise as well.
Hmm. Thank you.
So you're welcome.
Yeah. I used to not want to receive that kind of acknowledgement. Why? Because I was so afraid of appearing to be the perfect one, because in my upbringing, the perfect one was actually hated by the siblings and the, you know, mm-hmm. No, don't make me the perfect one. I don't want to be the favorite. I don't want to, don't show all my strengths at once, because people will want to be jealous of them or compare against
mm-hmm.
them. And boy, you know, instead, I really like hanging out with people. I love sitting down with clients when it's just like, yeah, you're freaking awesome. So are you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no comparison. You think about that space of, you know, I was actually thinking it's getting to be warm, and I'm not trying to rub it in, smog lady in Salt Lake City trapped underneath the
yeah.
shit cloud. But but anyway, it's going to be 80 degrees this week here in Texas. We've got a week of 80s. I'm like so excited. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And I've got a friend who's got a pool. And she's like, you can come over anytime. And I'm like, oh my gosh, my body loves swimming pools. I love walking in pools. That's awesome. I cool off my core. My joints are going to be so happy. And then I go, oh God, what am I going to wear in the pool? Oh, I'll wear my jeans and t-shirt. Like, oh no. the body shaming swimsuit experience comes up. And I go, wow, who the hell am I comparing myself to? It's not even comparing myself to anybody outside of me. I am competing with my, you know, freaking 30-year-old body. My 30-year-old body before the cancer, before the MS, before the hole in the heart was found and discovered. And really, I became aware of it. That's what I'm competing with. And I sit with myself and I go, why would you do that, Jenny? Why would you do that? There is nothing to gain from that. And I just go, oh, bear their jealousy of my younger body. I see you. I know you're there. I know you're going to show up every time it's swimsuit season. I know every time I walk by a mirror, you're going to be sitting there waiting for me just to see if I'll give you attention. But you know what? I know you're there. And instead of giving you the microphone, I'm going to be self-consciously aware of my self-criticism, self-aware, not criticizing myself. Instead, just go, oh, there's my awareness. I love you exactly the way you are, Jen. I'm glad you're alive, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
what a different message that would be. And I think about what you were saying, you know, in our friendship, and oh man, we've rumbled through some shit.
Mm-hmm.
We've both been really bratty.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? When you're having a crappy time, I love that, you know, now we have an agreement. We'd like, hey, I have a rant. We just give each other a warning. I am going to be completely catty and unconscious right now. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, here's the deal. If I don't actually get this out of me, I can't move it so that I can clear whatever it is that's underneath it. So I need a place for this to go. Like, we have that agreement and arrangement, not because we hold each other. Well, remember when you said this? How are you friends with that? We don't do that. We learned from our junior high itself. To let ourselves be human. And it's not about trying to be perfect. We are not trying to be perfect anymore. We're like, wow, I have a perspective about this situation. I am observing. I am totally catty. I have a perspective. I'm in awe. You know, and we mm-hmm. just be with where we are. Would you say that that's like the biggest tool that we could tell people is be really present in just where you are?
Yes, I was going to say being present with myself and my experience rather than climbing up Jen's ass every time she did something great served me in our relationship, and therefore it served the relationship. Being willing
yeah.
to be accountable for my own experience, my own actions, my own thoughts, my own feelings, my own beliefs, accountability, 100% getting back in my life is what saved and increased and strengthened our relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And actually being really accountable in myself kept me from trying to save Angie when she went to her pathetic whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It kept me going, oh, that's not mine. Oh, she created it. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I just stayed out of judgment of it, which isn't easy. It took practice. It took work for both of us. But overall, it's just really a very clear staying in our own lane, in our own moment, because
mm-hmm.
if we start comparing and competing, we are killing our aliveness. You may think you're jealous of somebody else, but you're actually using somebody else's experience to dim your aliveness.
Surprise.
Surprise. Yeah, I
it's
know.
Never
it's like,
about
no,
the
I'm
other
jealous
person.
Because I... yeah. I'm jealous because I want them to behave. No, you actually just want to stop your aliveness a little bit. You know, and,
mm-hmm.
and we can't save people from their stuff. That's kind of a big problem, too. Don't try to save people from their stuff. You know, you're just enabling them by saving them from their own experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. There's a lot. But, hey, guess what? We made it to the end of the show. Thank you for waking up to get on the show with me today, Angie. I so appreciate you so much.
Thank you for having me, Jen. I appreciate you. I love you so much. Thank you for having me here.
You are so welcome. And anybody that wants to know more about Angie, she's an amazing writer. She's a creator and an artist. She's just amazing. Will you quickly just give them your website?
Absolutely. It's AngieMilgate.com, and my name is spelled AngieMillgate.com.
Awesome.com. All right, Angie, mm-hmm. thanks for calling in. I really appreciate you.
Thanks, love.
Bye-bye. All right. So you know this topic's going to continue. Tomorrow, Sherry will be back on the air with me, and we are talking more about the awarenesses that come up when we're willing to look at jealousy and what's going on. If you've had an awareness as these shows have been unfolding, please contact me. Let me know so that if you need support, I can, you know, be a support to you. But just know you are not alone. Thanks for being here. I will be back again tomorrow. Have a wonderful day, y'all. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Lighten Up with Jen and Sherry. Find out more about Sherry's craniosacral and massage therapy practice by checking out her website at www.bodywisehealthcare.com. BodyWise is nourishment for the mind, body, and being. If you're part of an organization that could benefit from my dynamic, engaging public speaker for your next live event, or if you'd like to find out more about her programs offered, Jen can be reached at her website, www.jenhalterman.me.